Father, as we continue this morning, I just want to say thank you. Thank you that you reached down and you pulled us out. That our chains have now fallen off and now we can experience freedom. In Jesus' name, amen. Welcome to Hoboken Grace. For those of you who don't know me, my name's Chris. I'm the teaching pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And I'm excited to have you with us. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit amped up right now. That song just kind of took me to a different level this morning, and I'm trying to calm down. And I love those two songs, and I love how they brought those together this morning, and just this prayer, and then to be able to see how God answers that in our lives. Right now, we're in the middle of a conversation called More. For those of you who weren't with us last week, we kicked this thing off and we started talking about this idea of contentment, and specifically like real contentment, not fake contentment, but the actual definition of contentment is that we actually get to the point where we're satisfied with who we are or what we have. And for many of us, we've kind of changed this idea of contentment to be where we get to the point where we're okay with not being satisfied, right? And last week we talked about how, for a lot of us, this idea of contentment is almost like a pipe dream. This idea that I could actually be satisfied, it's something so foreign we don't even necessarily think about it anymore. And for others of us, we've just gotten really good at faking it. And so we either like lie to ourselves and tell ourselves that, listen, you know, whatever we lost, whatever we don't have, it's just not that important. Or we lie to ourselves and say, well, you know what, I lost that and that's important, but you know what, God's got something better for me. And so, you know, your car gets stolen and the person sitting next to you at your dinner group is like, well, don't worry, God's probably going to give you a better car. And like we talked about last week, God's like, I never said I was going to give anyone a car. And we'll lie to ourselves about this, or we'll just stay busy enough where we never actually have to think about it. And we'll just keep going and going and going and buying new things and new things and new things. And so we kind of fake this sense of contentment, right? But if we're to be honest with ourselves, the truth is it's not real. And if we were to be honest with ourselves, if we were to stop moving and to stop buying and to stop lying, we're not satisfied. Now, for most of us, we live our lives seeking all these different things that we hope will satisfy. But if we were to be honest, we're not satisfied. And last week, a lot of us walked out of here, and it was funny because I heard some of the conversations come out of the dinner groups, and a lot of the people in dinner groups were frustrated because they're like, we raised this question last week, but there was no answer, right? So like, they got together in the dinner group, and they're like, all right, you know, so let's talk about this. And they're like, we don't know, like, okay, we get it. We're not satisfied, but that doesn't help us, right? So where do we go from here? And that's kind of where we're going to pick up the conversation today, and we're going to begin to ask this question, how? Last week, we looked at a passage in John chapter 4 where Jesus stepped into your life and my life and said, listen, this idea of contentment, it's not just a pipe dream. And we saw him having a conversation with a woman at this well, and he said to her, he said, listen, you can find contentment. The picture that he actually uses is this well that rises up inside of you, that literally overflows inside of you to the point where you're constantly full. And not only are you full, but you're overflowing into the lives of the people around you. And so he steps into your life and my life and says, listen, this can happen. And so this week we're going to look at, okay, well then how does this begin to happen? The passage that we're going to dive into is found in 2 Kings, and it's found in chapter 22. It's actually a really interesting passage. Inside your program as you walked in today, there's a little notes card there, and hopefully you'll take that out. You can kind of jot down some notes as we walk through this together and begin to ask this question, okay, if it's possible for me to be satisfied, how do I begin to do that? If it's possible, Jesus Christ, that you can actually satisfy me, that I could know what it is to be content. What does that look like? How does that happen? The story that we're going to be looking at is about a king named Josiah. Now, Josiah's story is an interesting story because Josiah becomes king when he's exceptionally young. He's 8 years old when he takes over the kingdom. And the way that kind of worked out is the fact that Josiah's dad was a real idiot. I mean, a real idiot. And his grandfather was even worse than him. I mean, they were two of the worst kings that Judah had ever had. And so the people around his father actually assassinated his father in order to try to take power. But then all of them were killed by the people of Judah. And so Josiah finds himself in this situation where he becomes king at the age of 8. We don't know very much about the first 18 years, but his story picks up in 2 Kings chapter 22 in the 18th year of his reign, which would be when he would be about 26 years old. And so Josiah decides, you know what, let's do something about this situation that we have inside of Judah. It starts in verse 3. It says, in the 18th year of his reign, King Josiah sent Shaphan, the son of Man, I went over these names beforehand. I try to go over these names beforehand every time, and every time I struggle with them, right? Sent Shaphan, son of Azaliah, and the grandson of and they always do multiple generations. I mean, come on. Seriously, right? To the temple of the Lord. He told them, go to Hilkiah, the high priest, and give him and have him count the money that the gatekeepers have collected from the people at the Lord's temple, and trust this money to the men assigned to supervise the temple's restoration. Then they can use it to pay workers to repair the temple of the Lord. So Josiah comes along and he realizes, you know what, we should probably fix up this temple. Now remember, his dad and his grandfather were like two of the worst kings Judah had ever had. And in that time, the temple of the Lord had basically become desolate. It was in bad shape. And so Josiah comes along, and as you're reading this story, you think, okay, he understands what's important. He's going to begin working on the temple. But it's important for you to understand Josiah's mindset, because that's not how he's thinking. You see, Judah at this time wasn't worshiping God. Judah at this time was worshiping a multitude of gods. And so there were places of worship set up all throughout Judah where people could go and worship all sorts of different gods for all sorts of different things in their life. And so Josiah comes to this point and he's like, you know what, we should probably take care of the temple as well. So he sends these guys over there to collect some money and to begin taking care of this temple, because this god, you know, we should take care of this god just like we take care of the rest of the gods that we're worshiping. So they go over there and they begin to do that. They begin to clean up the temple. And just a couple of verses later, we find something very interesting. Verse 8, it says, Hilkiah the high priest said to Shaphan, the court secretary, I have found the book of the law in the Lord's temple. Then Hilkiah gave the scroll to Shaphan, and he read it. Now, in case this is lost on you, understand where Judah is at this point. This verse is like an incredible picture into where Judah is in their relationship with God. What has happened is Josiah has come along and said, listen, we should do something about this temple. So they collect this money, they go in to begin cleaning it out, and they find what they had at that point of the Bible. No one knew where it was. No one had read it. Right? And they're like, oh, look, there's some scrolls back there. I wonder what those scrolls are. Right? And they pick it up and they begin to read it and they're like, oh, this is the Bible. Like, that's how bad it had gotten. Right? It wasn't just like they knew like the Bible was on their shelf and they weren't reading it. They had actually lost it. I mean, things were in bad shape. And so they go in there and they find this scroll and they're like, well, maybe we should read it. And so the guy sits down and he reads it. When he reads it, he realizes the king should probably hear what this says. So then he takes it, says, Shaphan went to the king and reported, your officials have turned over the money collected at the temple of the Lord to the workers and supervisors at the temple. Shaphan also told the king, Hilkiah the priest has given me a scroll. So Shaphan read it to the king. He says, listen, he gave me this scroll. I think you should hear what this has to say. So then he begins to read to the king, the Bible or the law of Moses, which is basically the first couple books that you find in your Bible today. When the king heard what was written in the book of the law, he tore his clothes in despair. Then he gave these orders to Hilkiah the priest, Ahiakim the son of Shaphan, Akbor the son of, again, multiple generations. You get the point, right? And I think it's up here behind me, right? Go to the temple and speak to the Lord for me and for the people and for all of Judah. Inquire about the words written in this scroll that has been found, for the Lord's great anger is burning against us because our ancestors have not obeyed the words in this scroll. We have not been doing everything it says we must do. The king flips out. And so they sit down and they're rebuilding this temple. They're like, man, there's some scrolls back here. I think we should read. They read through them. They take them to the king. He begins to read this to the king, and the king realizes what God has said. And he begins to read through how God came to the nation of Israel and said, listen, if you'll worship me, if I will be your God, I will take you into this promised land and I will make you a great nation. He says, but if you abandon me, if you begin to worship all these other gods that the people around you worship, then I'm going to take you out of that land. And I'm going to continue to do that until you realize that I'm the only God. And so the king is sitting here listening to this covenant that God has with the people of Israel and with his kingdom of Judah. And he's listening to this and he realizes we're in trouble. Like we are in deep, deep trouble. And so he tears his robes, which I don't know what's up with that. It's like kind of the thing that they did back then, you know, like I don't know if they had really weak robes, you know. I don't even know that I could, or they're really strong people. I don't know that I could even do that, right? But this is kind of their sign of like we're in big trouble, like big time mourning. And so he tears his robes and he sends these guys to go talk to the prophet of God who's there at the temple to find out, listen, are we done? Like, because as he's reading this, he hears God say, like, I'm going to destroy you. And so he sends his advisors to talk to this prophet. They go talk to the prophet, and the prophet brings back to them this message of God, and God says to Josiah, listen, you know what? I am going to take you out of the land. He says, but because of the fact that when you heard this, you repented. Because of the fact that when you heard this, you responded the way that you did. Because of the fact that when you heard this, you didn't just shrug it off. You didn't just say, well, put that scroll away. I don't want to hear that, right? Like he said, because of the fact that you responded the way you did, I'm not going to do it while Josiah is king. And I'm going to give Josiah the opportunity to bring people back to me as he's the king. And for some of us, this is kind of difficult to understand because we don't necessarily, like I don't think very many of us have idols set up at home, right? I don't think like if we were to walk into your living room, there's like, you know, four or five like little images set up that you worship, that, you know, you get up in the morning, you're like, well, I need to pray to this one and I need to bow down to this one. And I don't think there are very many of us in that situation. A few of you may have shrines to, like, say, the New York Jets or the New York Giants at home, but outside of that, it's not something that we relate to very easily. But the thing that you need to understand about these idols and the people who worship them is that they didn't necessarily believe that the little image actually did anything in their life. These images represented different things in their life. And so there was one God that represented sex and relationships and fertility. And then there was another God that represented power and the power that they could have in their life and their ability to be able to rule over those around them. And each one of these gods represented different things in our lives. And the truth is, we don't have little idols set up at home. But for a lot of us, we do have things that we worship. As a matter of fact, last week as we looked at Jesus and the conversation that he had with the woman at the well, that's exactly what he was talking about, right? Because they're in this conversation and he says, listen, and he brings up the fact that she'd been married five times and now she was pursuing this sixth guy and he steps into her life and he says, listen, I know what you worship. And for her, it wasn't that she had these idols set up in her house, but for her, there was something very clear that she was worshiping. And for us, we may not have things that we've carved out of wood or that we've shaped that we have up on our mantle, but the truth is, we have things that we worship. And for a lot of us here today, the truth is, if we were to be honest about this story, a lot of us live our lives exactly the same way the nation of Judah did when we pick up this story. Because for the nation of Judah, God was kind of like one of the gods. Like they worshiped God, but he was just kind of mixed in with everything else. And they wanted God to be able to provide for them in certain circumstances, but they didn't really believe that God would satisfy them. They didn't really believe that God could take care of everything. The truth is, if we were to be honest today, and if we were to evaluate our lives, and if we were to come up here and we were to set up pillars that were dedicated to the things that we worship, there'd probably be quite a few pillars. Because when it comes to our lives, the truth is, for a lot of us, if we were to answer, okay, where is it that you actually find your security? It's our career. And if we were to lose our career, we would be terrified. Because that's what we believe makes us safe. Maybe for others of us, it's our bank account and the fact that we've been able to save and save and save, or our investments and the fact that we've made wise decisions in our investments, and so we feel safe and we feel secure because of that. For others, it's our family or our... It could be any number of things. But for a lot of us, the truth is, in our lives, we've kind of included God. But he's just one of many. The problem with that is that number one, you can never worship two gods. It just doesn't work. Try to worship your family as God and believe that your family can satisfy you, and worship your career as God and believe that your career can satisfy you. Try to worship those two at the same time. People try it all the time. It rips them apart. And at some point, you are going to have to choose which God you're going to serve. Is it going to be your career, or is it going to be your family? Try to serve the relationship that you have with your wife and loving your wife and providing for your wife and caring for your wife and your savings account at the same time. It won't happen. That's a joke, guys. Do you get it? Loving your wife, saving money, the two just don't go together. You can't serve two gods at the same time. It will not work. And even more than that, take it to an entirely different level. God will never, ever be okay with it. You see, that's what Josiah realized as he read through that book, that God would never, ever be okay with being one of many. See, God's never, ever going to be okay with you worshiping him and adding him to your career and your savings and your family and the relationship that you want. He's never going to be okay with that. For two reasons. One, he's God. And two, he loves you far too much to allow you to chase satisfaction in your career. He loves you far too much to allow you to chase satisfaction in a relationship. And for a lot of us, if we were to be honest today, God's just one of many. But the crazy thing is that the story doesn't stop there. And this is what blew me away, because when I first started to lay this out for us, and when I started to begin to study this, that was the message. That was the message, that God is one of many. But then I began to read through this story over and over again, and there's something that just blew me away. Because Josiah, as he realizes this, as he realizes the mistake that they've made, as he realizes the fact that this God is now just one of many, and that they've been worshiping all these other things that could never keep them safe, that could never provide for them, that could never satisfy them. As he realizes that, he begins to tear down all these other idols. He begins to tear down all these other places of worship. He begins to rip these things out, because he's like, listen, we're going to serve one God. We're going to depend on one God. And so he begins this process, but what blew me away is where the process starts. Chapter 23, verse 4. It says, then the king instructed Hilkiah, the high priest, and the priests of the second rank, and the temple gatekeepers, to remove from the Lord's temple all the articles that were used to worship Baal, Asherah, and the power of the heavens. The king had these things burned outside of Jerusalem on the terraces of the Kidron Valley, and he carried the ashes away to Bethel. He did away with the idolatrous priests who had been appointed by the previous kings of Judah, for they had offered sacrifices at the pagan shrines throughout Judah, and even in the vicinity of Jerusalem. They had also offered sacrifices to Baal and to the sun and the moon and the constellations and to all the powers of the heavens. The king removed the Asherah pole. Now listen, where was the Asherah pole? This is the thing that blew me away. The king removed the Asherah pole from the Lord's temple and took it outside Jerusalem to the Kidron Valley, where he burned it. Then he ground the ashes of the pole to the dust and threw the dust over the graves of the people. He also tore down the living quarters of the male and female shrine prostitutes. There were certain gods that you worshipped by having sex with these prostitutes. He also tore down the living quarters of the male and female shrine prostitutes. Where were these quarters established? Where were they built? That were inside the temple of the Lord, where the women wove coverings for the Asherah pole. The thing that blew me away as I began to work through this passage is not just that God was one of many, not just that they were worshiping these other gods, but they were actually worshiping them in the temple. I couldn't believe it. No wonder he flipped out. Can you imagine that? I mean, this is this place that had been built for the glory of God. This was this place where God was going to be present and the entire world could come to experience him. And now it's filled with these idols to all these other gods. And as I read that, I was scared. I was like, what could they possibly have been thinking? And again, this is something for us that's a little bit foreign, because we don't necessarily have a temple. We operate under a different system. We don't believe that God is present here in this room any more than he is anywhere else, that you can experience God more in this room than anywhere else. We don't believe that. Because the New Testament tells us that after Jesus Christ comes and you give your life to him, that the temple is no longer this one place where you go to experience God, but that we actually become the temple of God. As a matter of fact, Paul tells us that our bodies are the temple of the Holy Spirit, right? That the Spirit of God resides inside of us, and that we can experience God on a constant basis because he's always with us, right? Which is awesome, but it kind of makes, it's hard to understand this, but as the more I thought about that, the more I began to realize that if that's true, then if the truth is now that we've become the temple of God, that my body, that who I am is now the temple of God, And I take that and I put that into this passage, and I take that and I put that into this setting. Then I began to realize that in my life, any time that I allow money, that I allow my son, that I allow the relationships that I have to become more important than my God, I'm building idols in my temple. And in this place where God is to be lifted most high, my life, in this place where God is to be worshipped above all else, my heart, I've built idols. And I've begun to worship things that can never satisfy. And I've begun to pursue things that have no place in my heart. And I've begun to lift up things that don't belong. And the more I read through this passage, the more I realized we have idols in our temple. And you know what's crazy? Eventually, when we continue down this road, we no longer come to God to experience God. We come to God so that God will give us what we actually worship. And we step into this temple, we step into God's presence, not because we want to worship Him, but because we really want Him to give us that relationship. We really want Him to give us that promotion. We really want Him to fix what's happening in our family. Because that's what we worship. And when that happens, we've built idols in our temple. The band's going to come back up. And the staff's going to go to the back wall. Because here's how this starts. We began this with this question: how do I begin to experience satisfaction in God and God alone? How do I begin this journey towards contentment, and this journey towards what Jesus Christ says is this bubbling well inside of us? How? It starts exactly the way it started for Josiah. It starts by realizing that God is just one of many gods in our life. That we've built idols in our temple. And as Josiah came to the point where he realized that, he hit his knees before God. And he said, God, please have mercy on me. And so today what we're going to do is we're going to walk through this next song, and it's going to be a time for you to have a personal conversation with God. I don't want you to sing it. I just want you to sit and to be able to begin to interact with God. And for some of you, you're realizing, man, God is just one of many gods in my life. And the truth is, I haven't given Him first place. The truth is, I still have all these other idols in my life, all these other things that I believe are going to satisfy me. And you're beginning to realize that you have got to make Him first. And the truth is that this is what it means to be a Christian. This is what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ. Not that you add God to all your other gods, but that you finally get to the point where you stop trusting everything else and you just trust Him. And for some of you, you need to have that conversation today for the first time. And the staff is going to be along the back wall, and you can go back there and you can talk to any one of them about how you can have that conversation today. And maybe you don't really know how that all works, and you don't, fine, but don't sit there and miss it. Go find out. For others of you, there was a point in your life where you said, okay, God, you're going to be number one. You're going to be what satisfies me. I'm done trusting everything else. But as you've been on this journey, you've begun to build idols in your temple. And you've begun to come to God, not to experience God, not because you love God, not because you realize that He's all you need, but you've begun to come to God because He can give you what you actually worship. And you need to hit your knees. And we need to beg God for forgiveness. Because it is not acceptable to have idols in our temple. And until you do that, you will not experience the satisfaction that He has for you. And the band's going to play through this song. It's a song called Restless. A song about how we seek rest in all these other places, but the truth is that until He is the one that we pursue above all else, we'll always be restless. And there's space on the sides, and there's space in the middle, and you can turn around in your chair. I don't know what you need to do today as you have this conversation with God. But I know for some of you, you need to hit your knees. And to say to God, God, I'm done with this other stuff. I'm done trying to be satisfied with all this other stuff. It's only going to be You. Father, this is all about You and all for You. And this morning, we come to get rid of these idols. In Jesus' name.
To the heavens, rise into Your heart, Your
today as we continue this journey and we ask how, it begins when we realize that there are these idols in our lives. We identify those idols. You say, how do I identify those idols? What is it that you give priority to in your life? What is it that you turn to for comfort? When you're afraid, what is it that makes you feel safe? What is it that you give your time and your talents and your treasure to? You see, these are the things that we worship. When you go to God, what is it that you're pursuing? What is it that you want Him to give you? Is it Him? Or are you worshiping something else? The first step is to identify those idols. The next step is to rip those idols out. Some of those things just need to go. But some of those things are really good things that you can't let go. And so the truth is, in my life, it's really easy for my son to become an idol. To where I'm going to God, not to experience God, but so that God will make sure that my son is safe, so that God will make sure that my son, you know, enjoys the life that he's growing up into. And it's not the right thing to say, well, you know, we just got to rip that out. No. Some of these things are good things. But you need to have serious conversations with God about these things and to step into this conversation and say, listen, you know what, God? You're more important than Him. And I've found that one of the easiest ways to begin to talk through that conversation is begin to have a conversation about what would happen if something happened to that thing that I worship. And so, God, if you took Caden away from me, what would happen? And would I still worship God in that circumstance? If you lost your savings and everything that you had, would you still worship God? If God took your career away from you, would you still worship God? You say, well, what is it that you really value? And this begins when we identify those things. We come before God and we say, God, I've screwed up. But that's not where it ends, because you see, Josiah didn't just rip everything out of the temple. He also rebuilt the temple. And if you just rip those things out and you don't put something back in its place, you will go back to worshiping those things. If you say, you know what, I'm not gonna depend on my savings account for security anymore, but you don't increase your experience of God, you will go back. If you say, you know what, I'm not gonna depend on those drugs to be able to comfort me anymore, and you don't replace that with an increased experience of God, you will go back. And so as we continue moving down this journey, we're not just ripping things out, but we're increasing our experience of Him. And that's what we're going to be talking about as we move forward in this series. But my challenge to you as we take this step today is that as you go into this week, that you would identify those things in your life that you've been worshiping. And that you would begin to increase your experience of Him. Last year at this time, I issued a challenge. It was a 15-minute challenge. That you would dedicate 15 minutes of your day to experiencing God. I want to bring that back to you today. And it's to challenge you, if right now you're not giving that time to Him, start with 15 minutes. 15 minutes of your day just focused on experiencing Him. The way that I do it in my day is that I begin with a worship song and I pop in my headphones and I listen to that, and then I come out of that and then I go into kind of like what we do here at Silence, where I just share my heart with God. And then I pick up His word and I begin to read it, not so that I learn something new, but that I can experience Him so I can get to know Him. And then coming out of that, I'll spend a little bit more time in prayer and then I'll end with a song. I'm telling you, 15 minutes... My challenge to you as we continue this series, 15 minutes with God every day. You have to increase your experience. For others of you, you've already begun to experience him in that way, and that 15 minutes is a consistent part of your day. And one of the things that I've learned is that increasing your experience doesn't necessarily work with increasing the amount of time that you're spending with him in the mornings or in that 15-minute time, but begin to build. Maybe you add in a time at lunch where you're going to go back and you're going to revisit that passage that you read in this morning, and you're going to spend some time in prayer with him at lunch as well. Increasing that experience. You have to rebuild your temple. You can't just stop worshiping those things. You have to start worshiping him with everything that you have. That's the challenge. And for some of you, you're sitting here today and you're saying, I don't think I can do that. Guys, this is the way. There is no other way towards what we talked about. This idea of contentment, this idea that there will be a well bubbling up inside of you. You can try it any other way you want, but I'm telling you, God has not lied to you. There are not other ways. And he has not lied to you. He will be faithful. And if you follow him, you can experience this. Do not discredit what Jesus Christ said last week. You can be satisfied. Will we follow? Father, please don't leave us where we are. Our faith is in you and what you've said. And so we walk this journey believing that you can be the source of living water, this bubbling spring inside of us, that we would never thirst again. In Jesus' name.